Evening. May 15th, 1988, Rabbi A.H. Lapin's first shiur after his trip to Israel.
A very short introduction. First of all, to congratulate Alan and Karen on having moved into a new home, and I'm sure there's still the Chanukah Sabbath, so I'm not saying very much about the new home, but what I would like to do is to take this opportunity to wish them Mazel Tov on it, and may there be much happiness and a sense of fulfillment in this new home. And secondly, please accept my apologies for arriving so late this afternoon. And without any more ado, let us get on to the subject. Now, I call the subject Israel, the Wrong and the Right. And these are impressions that I have gained in Israel from my own observations and from speaking to some of the people in Israel that I was privileged to meet. And there was one person that an appointment was already made and arranged, and unfortunately it meant that I would have to go down to Bnei Brak, and I was unable to keep that appointment and it had to be cancelled, and I regret still that I wasn't able to see this particular person, and I have a word or two to say about him during the course of my remarks. Now, I've called this talk Israel, the Wrong and the Right, and that is the order in which I wish to deal with it, the wrong and the right. Now, I don't have to tell you that we are living not only in difficult times, but we are living in extraordinary times. We are living in a time where things just don't make sense as far as we Jews are concerned. And what is, to me, so remarkable and also simultaneously a source of great faith is that what we see now in Israel and what we see with Jews in the rest of the world, and when I say now, I'm speaking about the modern era, and the modern era I refer to the last 50 years. What has happened in the last 50 years, one cannot understand by any stretch of the imagination. And we've got two verses in the Torah, two verses in the Chilchecha of Kisovo, which just reflect the situation. The one is that if Israel as a people ceases to obey the Torah, then they have Fitzuchu Hashem b'cholu amim mitzeho oritz ad kitzeho oritz. Hashem will spread you out amongst all the nations from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. And that is something which we click, that is something that has happened today. Until the outbreak of the Second World War, Jews were almost in every conceivable part of the world. And then came the period of the refugees, and through the refugees they went to places where Jews had never, it's been unheard of, completely unheard of, a place like Chile, where Jews suddenly went, parts of Africa, and so this has come to pass, where Hashem has spread us out throughout all the earth, from one end of the earth to the other. And the second remark is, V'holiso mishugo mimaraya necho, and you will be stunned by this, what your eyes will see. It will be impossible to understand. And this is something that we find that is happening today, that it's just impossible to understand what is happening in Israel and round about. On the one hand, there is this terrible hatred of the Jews towards us, of the non-Jewish world towards us, and it goes far beyond it, and which we will see how it affects us. Now, I want to speak to you about the political side and the religious side. Now, as far as the political side is concerned, the question is, where do we stand at the moment in Eretz Israel? We have these riots taking place, and although when one is in Israel, and this is something very remarkable about Israel, everybody goes about his work, everybody goes about his business, and one doesn't realize that all these riots are taking place. One doesn't just see it, unless one goes into these areas. Nevertheless, it is taking place, and what is so wrong is that we Jews are not speaking with one voice. And so there are four voices that are speaking all the time. The one voice is, nothing is to be given away. The other voice is, give them the West Bank. We don't need it, we don't want it. The third voice is, let us live together with the Arabs. Let them come into Israel itself, and we will have one nation. And in 50 years' time, there will be only Israelis. Then we will be so part, as the Arabs, and we will be part of one another, we will intermingle, we will intermarry, and there will be one people. Doesn't matter about the color, who cares about that? Doesn't matter about religion, we don't believe in that. We will be one people. Now that is a definite view in Israel. The fourth voice is, we have no right to Israel whatsoever. We came there, we took it away from the Arabs, we drove them out, and we have no right to Israel whatsoever. We have to give it back and we must get out. That's all there is to it. If we stay there, we must know, we stay there at the pleasure of the Arabs. Now those are the four views that are being expressed in Israel today. They are four voices, they are official voices. What does the Arab world say? The Arab world speaks with one voice. The whole of Israel is Palestine. Palestine belongs to us. The Jews took it away from us. And we want the whole of Palestine, not the West Bank. We are prepared to take the West Bank only as a beginning, but we want the whole of Palestine. That is one voice with which the Arab world speaks. And those who listened to Ted Koppel interviewing Jewish representatives and Arab representatives, and he interviewed them on one night and at the same time, those who listened will have heard that the Jews have these four views, although the one wasn't very clearly expressed, but I know about it. And the Arabs all spoke with one voice. They, Palestine belongs to them. Now, what is the reason that we Jews are not able to speak with one voice? What is the reason that we have such a weak argument when it comes that very Tuesday night? The Jews have nothing to say. What right have we got to the land? The reason is that we have gone so far away from Torah that not a single Jew amongst the secularists is prepared to say or can say the only right we've got to Israel is because God gave Israel to the Jews. It's mentioned in the Torah that he gave it to Abraham. Again with Yitzchak, it's mentioned in Yitzchak, that he gives it to Yitzchak and his seed. With Yaakov, it's mentioned again that he gives it to Yaakov and his seed. That is the only right we have got, and that is all. And without that, we haven't got a case. Now, when you get people in the government of Israel, I'm excluding the religious parties, they are not prepared to say that. They've got no case whatsoever. And the Arabs are making their case very strong. And when they are confronted with the argument by the Jews, by the secular Jews, by those in political power, they're confronted by the argument that even when you did have Palestine, you were killing the Jews. You killed them in 1929. You killed them in the early 1920s. Their argument is, of course we killed the Jews. They decided to take the land away of us at the first Zionist conference. That is when they decided. And we knew, we saw what they were doing. They were coming and they were settling. And their plan was, and their plan was made known, that they want a land for the Jews. Then came the Balfour Declaration. Of course we opposed it. You were taking our land away from us. That is their claim. Now in 1937, when riots were taking place, had been taking place since the 1920s and into the 1930s, and Jews were being killed by the Arabs, and England had the mandatory power over Palestine as it was then, there was the Peel Commission. And this subject came up before the Peel Commission. The Peel Commission, which was a royal commission which took place in London, and this problem came up with the Peel Commission, with what right have the Jews, what right have the Jews to demand Israel? Now, you remember that there was the Balfour Declaration, which was given, I think it was in 1918 or 1919, probably, or 1917. There was the Balfour Declaration, and the Balfour Declaration read, the main sentence in it was, His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment of a Jewish national home in Palestine, provided it doesn't infringe on the religious rights and the civilistic rights of others. But what it said was that His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment of a Jewish national home in Palestine. So they were bound to that. But they wanted to know, what right have the Jews got it? The Jews spoke with one voice, and they said, it's the Bible. And England respected it. Then Gurion took out of his pocket an old worn Tanakh, and he opened it and he read, and he feigned surprise that they couldn't understand that they should even ask a question, what right of the Jews to Palestine? It says them in the Bible. And the Peel Commission, which was a Goyish commission, the Peel Commission accepted it. That was our only claim. We spoke with one voice. Today, Israel speaks with four voices, and the Arab world speaks with one voice. Now that is, as far as I see, that is the political problem as it is in Israel. Now, what is the position? What should be our view? I'm concerned only with the Torah view. Now, even in the Torah world, things have gone wrong and things have gone right. And I shall speak about the things that have gone wrong and the things that are right in the Torah world. And one of the things that have gone wrong in the Torah world is that there are also two voices. There is an authentic Torah voice, and there is a non-authentic Torah voice. And I think I should take the opportunity as briefly as I can to give you something of the history of why there are these two voices in Israel. Now, the Rambam... The Rambam wrote several works. Amongst his least known works are several letters which he wrote. One of those letters is Egeres Tamar, the letters that he wrote to the Yemenites. The Yemenites were being forced to accept Mohammedanism, and he wrote a letter to them at the request of one of their great men. He wrote a letter to them, one of their great Amidei Chachamim, he wrote a letter to them of Chizuk and Idut, giving them strength and giving them encouragement that they should keep to the Torah and study the Torah. And in the course of that letter, he says, that from the moment the Torah was given, everything was done by the non-Jewish world to destroy the Jewish people. And it was done in one of three ways. One way in which it was done was by force, forcing the Jewish people to give up their religion. Another way in which it was done was by words, speaking to them, being kind to them, making everything open to them. If you come over to us, you are part of us, you can be part of us. And the third way in which it was done was by saying, all of this is very well, you've got a religion, but we need something in addition to that. And so there is an additional religion, and of course he is referring to the Christian religion and to the Muhammad religion, which says, the Bible, of course the Bible is true, and we accept the Bible, that's the Old Testament, and it is the New Testament too. Those were the three methods that were used. Now, the Rambam wrote this letter at great peril to his own life, and he asks that this letter shouldn't fall into the hands of the Gentiles in Yemen, nor of his own country, and he was in that time living in Egypt. This letter did a tremendous amount for Yemenite Jews. The Chofetz Chaim said in his day, said the Chofetz Chaim, and he still belongs more or less to our period. The Chofetz Chaim said that those three methods have now been adopted by Jews themselves to break the Torah and to take the Torah away from the Jewish people. He says the method of force. Now, I don't know whether this is known to you at all, but when communism came into Russia, there were 3 million Jews in Russia. There were Jewish communists, and the Jewish communists were the worst enemies of Torah and of the Jewish people. It was the Jewish communists that saw to it that there was to be no Torah, that there was to be no observance. It was the Jewish communists that knew about the mikveh and closed down the mikvehs. We know that at Moshe Feinstein, there's a difference in his family. There's a space of 13 years when there were no children. 13 years when he lived in Russia, and not only were the mikvahs closed, but at the river, they put guards at the river, and any woman who went to the river would be shot. That was done by Jews in Russia, says the Chofetz Chaim, that these three methods about which the Rambam speaks, which the outside world has adopted to break the Torah, these three methods are now brought about by Jews. The second method, you've got the secularists. They take the Bible and they make an absolute mess of it. It wasn't written by Moses, it was written by Hammurabi, many people wrote it. There's no such thing as Torah Min HaShemayim, and if there's no such thing as Torah Min HaShemayim, you break down everything. Okay, you imagine that any sensible person, can you imagine, who doesn't believe in Torah Min HaShemayim, can't put on the lights on Shabbos. Can't put on the lights on Shabbos. Traveled in a plane, my kosher food please, kosher food? Did you order kosher food? Yes, we ordered it. We ordered it twice. And the third time we reminded to them, they were quite annoyed. And they said, of course you ordered kosher food. No, no kosher food. It's a long journey, 16 hours. And I go up the plane and down the plane, there's not a single person that knows me. And I'm really hungry. You think if I didn't believe in Torah Min HaShemayim, I wouldn't have a jolly good meal. Well, why shouldn't I? A man thinks out a cotton bull story about what animals you can eat, what animals you can't eat, customs and all that, and I've got to sit and hunger because of that? It happened 3,000 years ago? Of course I wouldn't pay any attention to it. No Torah Min HaShemayim, you break down everything. Says the Chofetz Chaim, in our own people are doing it. And the new religion, what is the new religion, says the Chofetz Chaim? The new religion is, you don't need Torah at all. If you do need Torah, you need something in addition to it. You need nationalism. Nationalism is something that will save the Jewish people. But what's about the terror? Well, there's such a thing as religious nationalism too. You can have nationalism and you can have terror. So the Rehovitz Chaim says that we have got now within the Jewish people themselves, we've got these three means that are being used in order to break down the terror. Now, the Rehovitz Chaim goes on to explain, and he says, and you know, I heard all this, and I read all this by the Chofetz Chaim when he was appealing to the Torah world. I saw all this, and I read all this, and I heard all this, and I heard it repeated, and I heard my teachers speaking about it. But that was when it was all so distant. One didn't realize what it was that was going to come as a result of all this. And now it's all come about. And the Chofetz Chaim said, you know, if you take the Jewish people, in his day they had already been 2,000 years without a land. 2,000 years without a land, and we were still a people. What is it that kept the Jewish people all this time? 2,000 years, no land. The only thing that kept the Jewish people was the Torah. They studied the Torah, they believed in the Torah, that was the only thing that kept them. Now this is something that had never been experienced before, never experienced since, that a people could be without a land for 2,000 years and not only survive, but be dynamic and be creative. What a literature they created. What a total literature. It's already on the time of the Tannaim. We didn't have a land of our own. We had the period of the Tannaim, the period of the Avaroim, the period of the Golim, the period of the Rishonim, the period of the Achronim. 2,000 years. And what a period it was. Vibrant. Without a land, without Torah we couldn't have managed. Without a land we did manage. Says the Chofetz Chaim. You know, a person needs, in order to live, he needs air and he needs bread. Now, which is more important? He said, if he hasn't got air, no point in providing bread. So the first thing he's got to have is air. And that is the Torah. However important Eretz Yisrael is, he said, the Torah is there. Without Torah, you can't have anything at all. Now, the Chofetz Chaim and the Gedolei Yisrael of that day and the Gedolei Yisrael of today have as their basis for everything the supremacy of the Torah. The Torah comes before anything else. Nationalism, the land comes before everything else. Religious nationalism, everything is subsidiary to the land. Everything is subsidiary to Eretz Yisrael. Everything is subsidiary to the ancillary to the state of Israel. That is really the deciding factor. Now the Chofetz Chaim, and I'm speaking about his day already. Don't forget he died in 1933. In his day, he made the following remark. He said, you know, if a descendant of Haman or Russia becomes a Jew, once he becomes a Jew, he's an Amalekite, but once he becomes a Jew, not only is he accepted, but there are laws regarding him. You must love him. But it says in any case in the Torah, over and above loving him as your next one, you've got to love him because he is a Gael. He's become a Jew. How we love him. On the other hand, says the Chofetz Chaim, what happens is a Jew who doesn't believe in the Torah, doesn't believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. There's a Jew who doesn't believe and doesn't keep anything in the Torah. He's a nationalist Jew. He says he is a thief as far as the Torah is concerned. He's got no place at all. No law that we love him, no law that he's part of us, nothing at all. In Eretz Yisrael, of course Eretz Yisrael is most important. There are two whole siddurim, two whole orders in the Talmud which contains only six orders, which conserve only Eretz Yisrael. Kochim and Taras, those two orders conserve only Eretz Yisrael. In addition to that, you take all in every other order, there are mechitzot that concern only Eretz Yisrael. Sanhedrin, a large part of Sanhedrin, the whole of Sotah, the whole of Nausea, all concerns only Eretz Yisrael. A Jew cannot fulfill himself in its entirety without Eretz Yisrael. Of course we want Eretz Yisrael. And he was at that time speaking about the kibbutzim. And in his day there were the kibbutzim that were going to Eretz Yisrael, and it was completely, completely anti-religious. No belief in God, making it quite clear. In the 1920s, when they built the big synagogue in Allenby Street in Jerusalem, there was on Pesach a demonstration by kibbutzniks who didn't believe, and they rode on the first day of Pesach on horses down Allenby Street, eating, munching bread, sandwiches, meat and milk and tafer meat, munching down, doing everything possibly wrong as demonstration. Of course he said that is a villain. Is that what we've got to support? He said, we don't support that. Now that was already the Chofetz Chaim. Now, I'm trying to explain something to you. I make every allowance. I make every allowance for people who have never been exposed to Torah and have no hatred to Torah, but they just don't believe. They don't understand it and don't believe it. I make every allowance for that sort of thing. But one thing we've got to understand. There is a certain weakness that a person has. When he feels he is wrong, he gives way to the other side and he speaks from a position of weakness. That's what you've got the position with the secularists in Israel today. They've got no case for Israel. They've got nothing to say why Israel should belong to us, making all sorts of excuses. You've got to understand the Arabs. Don't say you've got to understand the Jews. They say you've got to understand the need of the Arabs. They don't say you've got to understand the need of the Jews. This is a weakness. And Jews have a weakness for this also. Oh, it doesn't matter. He gives charity. He's a very good man and everything. And we don't realize what it is all about. Of course we've got to understand a person that has never been exposed to it, but we've got to understand where we stand, and we've got to realize what is the Torah view towards it all. Now, that is what the Chofetz Chaim spoke about. What is the religious view in Israel today? In Israel, you've got the religion, religious people are also divided into two parts. You've got those who are a religious Zionists, religious nationalists, and on the other hand, you've got those who are religious and want to be guided only by the Torah. Now, in both camps, amongst the religious nationalists, you will find those who say, under no circumstances must we give back any land, and there are those who say, look here, let us give back the West Bank at least. Now, what is the position with the religious Jews who are not religious nationalists, but who believe in the supremacy of the Torah? And I wanted very much to meet with Rav Shach, and that was the appointment that was arranged for me to go down to Bnei Brak to meet him, and I just couldn't manage it, it just couldn't be arranged, and I was unable to go down, and I wanted to discuss this with Rav Shach. I heard his views, but I wanted to hear it from him and to be able to discuss it from him. Now, you find amongst the religious Zionists, you find those who say you are not allowed to give back any part of Israel that we've already conquered, to give it to the Goy. And what is the worst part of all is that they cite their authorities. that when these people cite their authorities, the best thing to do is to ask them to show it to you in writing. And when you see it in writing, it's altogether a different story. But it is true that they have got rabbis, and these rabbis are appointed by them, and these rabbis have said you must not give back any part of Eretz Yisrael. But these rabbis are those rabbis who are appointed by these people, and who are fed by these people, and whose salaries are paid by these people, and it's the easier thing for them to depose them, to take their positions away from them. And once a person is not independent, he is not in a position to give decisions, not in a position to give Torah decisions. And that is why the chief rabbi of Israel has never been the authority on Torah. He's a paid official. And we've had some outstanding chief rabbis. When Rabbi Herzog was chief rabbi, he was very careful. When he was asked to give a decision, he used to call the Rosh Yeshivas together, he used to call the Admurim, the leaders of the various Hasidic movements together, discuss everything with them. And when he gave a decision, it was the decision that was taken together with all these great luminaries, with all these great authorities. And he never went wrong. With Rabbi Unterman did the same thing. And he would have a much more difficult task than Rabbi Herzog. And it came the time when Rabbi Unterman, he called the leaders together, what is the Torah of you? And together they sat down and decided the Torah of you, and that was his decision that he gave. Then it came to a question of who is a Jew, and these questions, and he said, now what is our stand? And they sat together and came to a conclusion, and it didn't take them too long to come to a conclusion. It was so simple, it was so direct. And he said to them, you know what this means. If I give this decision, it means that I lose my position. They were very concerned about that, because they knew that the next rabbi would never consider doing what Unterman did. They said, this time we've got to make a stand. Can't be helped. There's nothing we can do. He said, very well, he gave the decision, and immediately a meeting was held, and he lost his position. He's no longer chief. He was no longer chief rabbi, and another chief rabbi was appointed. So we don't take our decisions from those people. Now, I've been told on very good authority, and I can understand the decision very well, that Rav Shach said there is no reason for not giving land back to the Arabs if it means Jewish life is going to be saved. If Jewish life is not going to be saved, we've got no right to give it back. Now, I want you to try and realize what that West Bank means. In Israel, altogether, there are little more than 3 million. There are 800,000 Arabs in Israel itself. On the West Bank, there are at least 1.25 million Arabs on the West Bank. There are over 3 million Palestinians outside of Israel waiting to come back, who want to join up with the 1.25 million Arabs on the West Bank. 1.25 million Arabs on the West Bank. 800,000 Arabs in Israel itself. Over 2 million Arabs. And we are barely 3 million. What chance have we got there? And they hate us. And it means that we have really got what we have got is a Trojan horse. If we give them back that land, we're not interested in them. They want to come into our territory, we shoot them. Every right to do so. We're not responsible for you, this is our country, you want to come here, we defend them. It would be a very good solution. We don't get anything out of this West Bank. The only thing is we've got 60,000 Jews living there now. Those are the settlements. We can't throw 60,000 Jews to the mercy of the Arabs. We know exactly what is going to happen. That is something that we can't do. That is our dilemma. But about giving the land back, there's nothing in the Torah that says that at this stage, if it's a question of saving life, nothing in the Torah that says you can't give that land back. We are not living at a time where we can say, well, Mashiach has come and this is our land. We are coming very close to it, but that time hasn't arrived yet. So amongst the Torah Jews, they are led by the spokesman of Torah Jewry today, and that is Rav Shach, and this is what Rav Shach had said. One can't just give the land back to them because of 60,000 Jews. He just doesn't know what to do with these people. And Rav Shach was the one who was opposed to the settlements in these areas. He felt that the danger was too great. We didn't know what was going to happen there. Now that is the situation that you have as far as the political side of things in Israel are concerned. And now I would like to turn to the religious side of what is going on there. On the religious side, again, you've got the wrong and the right. You know, there is a passage in Amos. That runs like this. Imei yomim boim le'um Hashem elokim. Behold, there will come days, says Hashem, that yishlachti roh bo'oretz, and I will send a famine in the land. Lo rov lalechem lo tzomo le'amayim. Not a famine for bread, nor a thirst for water. Ki im lishmora es divrei Hashem. But to listen to the words of Hashem. The Nomi Yom Niyom, they shall wander from sea to sea, and from north to south, Yeshotetu Levakeshes Dvar Hashem. They shall run to and fro to seek the word of Hashem, the Lohim soul, and they shall not find it. Now, the Pono Vizhirov, who made a tremendous contribution to Torah in Israel, a tremendous contribution. There is a great Torah in Israel today, and it was the seed that was planted by the Pono Vizhirov. The Pono Vizhirov asks, what is so terrible if there is a thirst for Torah? This is something that is good, and that people should run all over in order to find the word of Hashem. This is something that is good. Why is it written in a way where Amos predicts that this is one of the curses that will come upon the world, the Yomim HaBoim? Now, when the Tanakh speaks about the Achris HaYomim in the end of days, and when the Tanakh speaks about Yomim HaBoim, the days that are to come, it is speaking about what the Chazal afterwards calls Ikves Shed Mashiach or Chavlei Mashiach. And that is when one already hears the footsteps of Mashiach, or the birth pangs of the coming of Mashiach. And the way the Chazal take it is, the way it's taken in Gemara, that the whole period of exile is regarded as a woman that is with child. And she is waiting for the child to be born. And the nearer the time comes for the child to be born, the more difficult it is, until at the very last moment, there are the chevlei leido, there are the pangs of birth, and then the child is born. And the Chazal say that it is the same with the Jewish people. Before the deliverance, before the redemption, that is the worst time. And so we find that in the case of the Bnei Yisrael, when they were in Egypt, things went from bad to worse and from worse to worse, until it became so bad that the Egyptians refused to give the Jews, the Bnei Yisrael, the wherewithal to produce the bricks that they had to supply, and yet they've got to produce the same number of bricks. That was it, it became so bad. And then it was the time that the deliverance came. And so, the Chofetz Chaim said, Pono Vizhirov said, the same applies today. And what is going to happen is, that in the end of days, people will search and will wonder, they will go and want to find favor. There will be a thirst for favor. There will be hunger. There will be a drought for favor. And they will run all over and they won't find. How is it possible that they won't find? Now, we are living in an affluent society. We don't really know what true hunger is. But the Prophet Jerome did know what true hunger was. He knew true hunger from the end of the First World War, when there was terrible famine in Russia and in Poland and Lithuania and these countries. And he says, in a famine, what happens? The person who is living in a time of famine looks for food. He goes and he grovels in the rubbish, in the garbage. And if he finds potato peels, he eats the potato peels. He would never look at it at any other time. But it's a time of famine and drought. If he finds water and the water is muddy, he'll still drink the water. The water isn't clean. He will still drink the water. He's got nothing else. And Prophet Jerome says, this is what Amos predicts. That there will come a time when anything will pass a stone. And that is what is wrong in the Torah world. We've got a tremendous amount of things that are going on that just pass a Torah and is not Torah. You find that there are people who are giving shiurim, and some of these shiurim were repeated to me at a social evening that was held in my wife's and my honor in Jerusalem our last Saturday night, which was absolute nonsense. But these people are giving shiurim. One Rosh Hashiva told me, today, he said, I can't introduce Musar into my yeshiva. You are dealing with Israeli young men. They don't want to be told what to do. They are not prepared to accept that one changes oneself. One endeavors to improve oneself. This is who I am and what I am. Accept me for who I am and what I am. That is the climate. Not everywhere. But those are things that are taking place. And people are flocking just to listen to all this. There is one man that hasn't come to California yet, but I'm sure as soon as he hears what wonderful things there are in California, he's going to come here. And this man knows absolutely nothing and has now become a Baal Mekubal. He's a mystic. And people flock to him and he tells them what is going to happen to them. There was one woman who can't have children and he said, a public statement, within a year, you are going to have a son. And when somebody told me this, and I said to him, well, perhaps he's right, you don't know. He said, well, it's already 6 months. He said, well, she's still got another 3 months to go. Perhaps it could be. This is being accepted. When I was at the wall, and he came up to me, and I was introduced to him, I just couldn't look at him. I just walked on. Afterwards, we left the wall, we stood outside, waiting for our taxi. And the person who took us to the wall said, now look here, can you see this car coming out? That is he. He goes right up to the wall. You can't go there. You've got to get out of the taxi here. He's a very wealthy man today. A few years ago, he was a very poor man. Flock to him. Give him big sums of money. Of course, he'll be found out one day. But these are the things that go on, and that is what is wrong. And on the other hand, you've got such learning going on in Israel. Such depth of learning. Such breadth of learning. There are different types of learning in the different yeshivas. And it's going on all the time. There is such devotion and there is such dedication to learning. We've never seen the like of this in post-World War II Jewry. That is all taking place in Israel today. The Gemara tells us that one of the Amoraim, speaking about the Ikvasat Mashiach, this period before Mashiach comes, described it, and he said, may those who will see it will be the unhappy ones. One will have to go through so much. Didn't want to even see that there would be so much that could be wrong. But there is so much that is
That would just be the beginning.
There would be no peace. Everybody knows that. There would be no peace. Well, Rabshah says, of course there won't be any peace. It's just what is the best thing to do under these circumstances? What is the expedient thing to do? Of course there won't be peace. They'll dig their heels in and they immediately go out. The question is, it means that they're on the doorstep. They said, in any case, they're on our doorstep. When 3 minutes away and they are in Jerusalem already with their planes. They're on their doorstep in any event. Of course, the idea of giving it back, when the Rav Shach says, give it back, and then, of course, if we can find a way out of these 60,000 Jews, if we can't find any way out, we can't contemplate it even, we can't throw them to the Arabs. Of course, there won't be any peace. It's only we'll be able to contain the situation there. That's all it is. But we know there won't be peace. They want the whole of Palestine. And unfortunately, you get the one voice amongst the non-religious who say, they are right and we've got to get together with them and we've got to be one people and we'll all live together. It doesn't work like that. But those are the various voices. But there, no thought of it is that if there will be peace, of course there won't be any peace. Yes?
Since Israel is taking such a PR, being in PR, because of the pictures that we see in the paper of confrontations, one of these soldiers came to you and asked for advice on what he should do, what would your advice to him be?
One of our soldiers.
Yeah.
What should he do? Carry on to do what you're telling to do, what you're doing at the present moment. No question about it. Don't forget, they are killing us. We are just endeavoring to keep law and order. And that is all. There is no other way to do. What else can we do? Just let them carry on like this and then come into Israel proper? And we will still have a lot of trouble from them. Of course there is the terrorism which they are engage in and they bring it into Israel itself. But we can't just let it go at that. There is an opinion, and this is an opinion I understand it's in the government, that they may have to take considerably sterner steps. If they can't control this, they'll have to take considerably sterner steps. But they can't do any less than they are doing. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.